Start finding that thing that you love, find that enjoyment, start slow, build up your routine, but just know that you are absolutely capable of achieving your goals. There's no right time. And there's also, it's never too late. I feel like a lot of people have that mindset of like, well, it's too late for me. Just take this as your sign to start and know that you're absolutely capable. And there's no better time to start than right now.
Welcome to Discovering Nutrition with Chronometer. I'm your host and community marketing manager, Elisa. And today I am excited to sit down with special guest, Laura Lee Crabb. Laura Lee is a certified personal trainer at Caliber and a certified nutrition coach. Her love of fitness came after many years of feeling like exercise was something that she had to do. After years of thinking she had to spend hours on a treadmill to maintain her fitness, she realized that working out did not have to be a chore. She's now on a mission to empower women to shift their mindset and find a training method that works best for them. In this episode, we sit down with Laura Lee to discuss women's health, why severely restricting calories isn't the answer, despite being told it was for a very long time, how you can find joy in movement, and why creating sustainable and fun habits are the key to sticking with an exercise program. As always, this podcast is for general purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including getting medical advice. The use of information from this podcast is at the user's own risk and is not to be substituted for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Really excited to dive in. Let's do it. Really excited to have you here. And if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do for work, that would be great.
Yeah. So my name is Laura Lee, as we know, and I am a personal trainer. I'm also a nutrition coach, and I have some specializations. I actually have a specialization in online training, but also in women's fitness and also a behavior change specialization. Basically, I grew up and got my degree in education. So what was really important to me in kind of like finding my like job and career in terms of like fulfillment was being able to like teach people. And through my own personal fitness journey, I started, you know, in college, being a cardio bunny, kind of like we all do, you know, went through some tough times with my mental health in my early 20s, which, again, I think a lot of us can relate to. Lots of self-esteem, you know, second guessing myself, low confidence. And I discovered lifting one day. I was actually in a hotel gym and I was like at a conference for teaching. And I was at a hotel gym and like just decided to do like a chest and triceps workout. And I'll never forget like how empowered and strong that I felt during the workout. I was like, wow, I love this. Like, why haven't I done this before? And then I remember too, the next day, I couldn't even lift my arms like above my head because I had never done like any of her tricep movements before, you know? And I just remember being like, I want to do this again. Like, I need to do this again. And so from there, finding my love of lifting and what I saw from, you know, slowly building a routine and consistency was that not only was I more confident in the gym space and when I was like looking in the mirror, when I was giving myself pep talks of, you know, just like one more set, one more rep, like you got this. And I was finding that confidence in other areas of my life. And so I just discovered like how empowering that is to find a fitness routine that you truly love to do and that makes you feel good and strong and empowered. And I just knew that like this was kind of like the secret and that I needed to somehow teach others, you know, about this. So got my CPT. I just really have a love of learning too from education overall and being a teacher. And so I just knew that I wanted to learn as much as I possibly could to get those certifications, you know, to back myself up. So once I did, that's pretty much I dived into personal training and I've just found so much fulfillment in it of teaching others and specifically women too. That's pretty much who I primarily train. Definitely train men too, but I would say primarily women here. And it's so nice to see it click in others, to see that shift when they get into a routine, when they find something and they're like, wow, like I get this, I love this. And seeing their confidence and empowerment grow in other areas in their life too.
I love that. I have a similar story to you, I would guess. So what you're saying really resonates. Like I also grew up at a time where calorie restriction was pretty common, you know, like now we're seeing very well-fed, empowered women. And there's a lot, like, on social media, the shift in the last even like 6 years. We were talking before we started recording about just how long I've been here and that kind of thing. And when I first started, it was very different. It was like stay under 1500 calories. And now we're seeing women that are eating a lot more than that, myself included. And I just, it just has been a complete, not only shift for me, and I hope for you too, physically, but mentally, because I was had like a lifetime of beliefs about how many calories I could have and what foods were bad and what foods were good. And I also just did so much cardio. I actually worked at the gym as a teenager, and I would do like 2 to 3 hours of cardio a day. Yeah. And I'd have like maybe 1200 to 900 calories a day. And I was tracking even as a teenager, but just pen and paper. And now when I think about like the damage I probably did, like even hormonally and stuff. Yeah. But I think that there are a ton of women that are still living in that place because they just don't believe, because I didn't. If someone told me that I'd be working at a nutrition app, you know, when I was 18 and going forward and I'm eating, you know, like 2,500 calories, which is a lot, but I am very active. I'd be like, there's no way that I'd sustain my weight at that, right? Yeah. And it's taken me years to wrap my head around that. And I think that there's a lot of women that still don't believe that they can have that many calories. And as a community marketing manager at Chronometer, I see that. I'm sure that you see that. Yeah. I would love to hear if you see that in your practice, how you educate women to basically eat more and really like empower them to understand to not be afraid of calories, because I feel like that is what it comes down to. There's this fear. Yeah. So do you see that often?
Oh yeah. And that's definitely like the initial too, is that there's that fear there, especially if people either, whether they've tracked before or maybe they've stopped for a while and get back into it, that fear of like, oh my God, seeing that number and being like, oh my God, this is so much, or seeing when I set their macros there for feeling their body and they're like, what? It's so hard. I would say I did the same thing where like, it's really hard to break that mindset of like, oh, I should just need 1200 calories, you know, when like in reality, 1200 calories is the diet of a toddler. You know, it's like, you can't be sustaining, you know, a 25-year-old woman, you know, with lifting on that. Like, it's just, but the media has portrayed this, you know, narrative of women for years and years of trying to shrink ourselves and fit into this box, you know? So empowering women to slowly but surely see that, you know, they can take up space and be empowered to break those stigmas that we see in the media. I would definitely say it takes a little bit for people to get adjusted to. I'm also too of the mindset, like I like to see where people are at. Like a lot of the times with our nutrition process that we'll do when I coach women is, you know, have them download Chronometer Connect to get it set up and then just log as like they normally do for a week. You know, again, whether they've done it or not really helps not only them, but me to have that awareness of where they're at. Sometimes we just have no idea. Are we overeating? Are we undereating? And I would say a lot of the times it is that undereating there because we have that mindset of like, oh, I need to keep this, you know, under a certain amount. And then slowly working, you know, their way up. Like if someone's, you know, been at 1300 calories consistently, I'm not going to put them on, you know, a 2000 calorie diet right away. You know, that's not going to work. So kind of slowly working up to what their goal should be for their activity level and, you know, what they're trying to achieve there from looking at where they're at. And I would say that slow and steady method, not only is it helpful for like logistically adjusting to it with like the foods they're eating or prepping and things like that, but also to help them overcome that fear mindset over time when we do it the slow and steady method there.
Yeah, I actually worked with a coach. She was wonderful. We basically did reverse dieting. I'm not sure if that's still an accepted term. I hope it is. But it was a gradual increase. It wasn't like I went from eating 1200 calories to eating 2500 calories. It was a couple hundred all the time. And I think not only was that obviously good for prepping my body because it's not that like startling shift in caloric intake, but also mentally. And then I noticed there are things that I noticed that I just wish other women and probably men too, but I would say more specifically to women, there are just things that I noticed
beyond anything to do with my weight, my energy level, you know, like when I'm talking, I'm constantly moving. And I know that you are too. I see that. That's usually a sign of someone who is healthy, has a lot of energy, that kind of thing. And I used to have these mad crashes at work. We have a couch at Chronometer, and I've definitely slept on it before. At like 2 or 3 p.m., I'd just be no energy all the time, and I would have to nap, and I just wasn't feeling vital. And then I think working with a coach and then slowly upping my own caloric intake, I just feel so strong. And there's other things too. This is me personally, but I don't get sick as often as I used to, you know, like especially everything that's happened with COVID. I obviously at some point I did get COVID, but since then I just feel like I've really managed illness quite well. And I attribute that not only to obviously caloric intake, but having a very good idea about like vitamins and minerals and,
yes.
And mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that goes a long way, which is why I use the app every day, which you and I will talk about. I think that you obviously have some, like, would see people who like to track religiously and people who are more intuitive eaters. And I think that there's a place for everyone, whatever works for them. But when I was reading through your bio and all the work that you do, one of the things that really caught my attention, because I believe in it too, is finding something sustainable. Yeah. Whether it be like working out or diet. So can you talk to how someone starts any kind of exercise or dietary change in a way that will make it last?
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the best way to do it, is work your way up. You never want to like take on too much, you know, even if you have like the eager energy, you never want to be like, well, I'm going to work out, you know, from nothing to be like 5 days a week for like 90 minutes, you know, every day. It's like, oh, but maybe not, you know, start slow. So that's what I would say is you just got to start slow. You know, maybe it's like just focusing on workouts and you do like 3 days a week, or maybe it's just focusing on cardio, kind of build up your endurance, maybe having a step goal, you know, of like 5K steps daily, trying to get out for walks every day, get in some movement, or maybe you just focus on nutrition. And again, starting with seeing where you're at, getting into the habit of tracking, figuring out tracking. And for two, a lot of people, you know, even with tracking, I like to say like, utilize it how you'll best be consistent with it. So like, if that means like you can weigh out your food and use a scale and learn, you know, how to accurately track like that, then that's great. You know, if that means that, you know, you're searching up comparable dishes in Chronometer's database and like estimating serving sizes, like then that's great too. You know, so figuring out a style of tracking that works best, especially for people's lifestyle, you know, sometimes it's not realistic, especially with people I have that are like on the road, you know, on a weekly basis, you know, traveling for work, like it's not realistic for them to have a food scale, you know, with them and like track that kind of stuff. So finding a balance of how that works for them. But I think too, it's also like once you get macros and you start learning about that, it's just that added awareness of nutrition, meaning like you don't have to change everything about your diet. You know, it's not like we're throwing everything out, you know, overhaul, you know, it's finding those one or two tweaks like every week or every 2 weeks or every month that you can swap out. Like, you know, instead of eating regular pasta, maybe eat bonza pasta, you know, get in a little more protein and fiber, or, you know, maybe you find like a certain meal where you could boost up the protein a little bit, help you get more energy and fuel. It's like really about those small little changes and tweaks, like that way, like along the way, you're finding like the foods and meals that not only balance your macros best, but help you feel good too.
I think that people don't really appreciate what having enjoyment in something can do for their lives, because I don't weight train. I will be the first person to say that. I definitely do more like functional things, you know, like I'm a backcountry snowmobiler, so definitely hauling around a lot of, it's like 470 pounds. There is a throttle, but that doesn't mean that the weight isn't there. And then I'm like an avid runner, hiker, you know, like more of those kinds of things. And I think that one of the things where women that I see in my job as the community marketing manager is that people do this complete overhaul. You know, they're like, okay, I don't like where I am, and the things that I have done have gotten me to this point. Yeah. So in order to not be here anymore, I'm going to have to go completely the other way and make all of these changes. Right. And I've done that. I've done every diet under the sun. I've done Whole 30. I've been on keto. I've done Mediterranean diet. Like, I tried them all, mostly in my early 20s. Nothing stuck. And it was always so frustrating because it was like, I've never been overweight, but I would be gaining and losing the same 10 pounds all the time. Like, I always say I've lost like 150 pounds in my life easily, but it's the same 10. And it was finding what I love that changed everything for me. And I know that that sounds like airy fairy, but we're like, I love running. So I run 5 days a week easily. Mm-hmm. And I like distance running, and that's not for everybody, but if people can find exercise that is fun for them, gets them moving. Yep. I think that's the key. And I'm never like, I have to go for a run. I'm like, oh yes, I get to go for a run. And I think that anyone, there is something out there for everyone that will get their body moving. I do believe that. And the same thing with diet, you know, like, and when I worked with a nutrition coach, and I was very like unapologetic about the fact that I was going to still eat the food that I wanted to eat, maybe in smaller quantities, but that's been the tip. Like, people in my life are like, you have so much energy, your weight is completely stable. What's changed? And I'm like, I'm just doing things that I love. I'm eating foods that I love, making sure obviously in Chronometer that I am hitting my targets, because that does matter to me. and I'm moving in a way that is fun and joyful for me. I don't know how everyone goes about finding what that is for them. Maybe you have some suggestions. Do you see this in your practice, like just encouraging people to do what they love, or is that too, like, I don't know, loose? Do you have to be more regimented with people?
You know, it depends. I would say that's super important to find something that you love. I think experimentation is great. And I would say that, like, particularly I find a lot of people who come to me that they hate cardio. And it's definitely because of that old, like, I was a cardio bunny. I did hours on the treadmill. You know, a lot of us can relate to that. So it's about rediscovering and refinding. And that mindset shift makes all the difference in terms of, like, I get to work out, not I have to work out, I have to do this, or I don't want to do this, you know, that kind of thing. It is super important, because in order for this to be sustainable, it has to be a lifestyle change. You can't look at it as, you know, like, oh, well, this is just 3 months, so I'm just going to do this for 3 months and then see where I get at the end. Because then what happens after that? If you go back straight back to your old routine, then nothing changes. You gain all the weight back, or you don't have those habits anymore. So it really has to be a lifestyle change. And in order for people to really do that and stick to it long term, it has to be something that they enjoy. So I think it comes down to a lot of experimenting. In terms of like weightlifting, I always encourage people to strength train, even if it's, you know, using smaller dumbbells. Doesn't mean, you know, you have to be squatting 200 pounds, you know, or something like that. But figuring out a strength training routine and something that, again, is sustainable with people's lifestyle. I think a lot of people too will come to me and they'll be like, well, is 3 days enough? Is 30 minutes enough, kind of thing? Like, is that going to get me, you know, the results I want? Or is that, am I doing enough work? And kind of discovering that, like, that doesn't so much matter at the beginning versus like just finding and building a consistent routine. And like, you can always add on more. You can always add on more exercises. You can always add on more days of training. But it's really about building that consistency in first in place and finding something that's doable with your lifestyle, because getting 3 days a week is definitely better than nothing. You know, and what were you doing before? You know, if it was nothing before, that this is a step up from there. So it really does take some experimenting there. I think you have to be regimented in terms of like consistency, like whatever you're doing, like just, you know, keep showing up for yourself. But it really is like a trial and error thing along the way, especially I would say in the first, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of like, what do you like? And that's what I definitely recommend, especially for cardio, is like, don't feel like you have to force yourself to do something. Like, if you don't like running, then like, you're not going to be able to keep doing it, and you're going to hate it, and you're going to dread showing up for it. You're not even going to do the workout because you're going to dread showing up already before it's even begun. So really try to do, whether it's, you know, just a walk outside, you know, or you get on your Peloton for like a 20-minute, you know, ride, you know, really finding something that you love to, or taking a workout class. Some people really like that community environment in kind of mixed with their solo training. And I always really encourage that too.
Yeah, I think that there's this also this conception, and I maybe grew up at the wrong time for a lot of, like, you know, it was intense calorie restriction and workouts were not really meant to be fun. It was like grueling. So yeah. I think that so much of this is mental. It's like, no, you can love working out. Yeah. And I never make myself do anything. And maybe I'm lucky in the fact that I just love the things that I do. Mm-hmm. But if I don't feel like going for a run, I'm not going to. And that works for me well. I'm not saying that that's like something, you know, some people might need a little bit more discipline.
Yeah.
but I just, because I love being outside, I'll never run on a treadmill. You know, I know myself, I'm just running on trails and that kind of thing. And with my dog, which goes, a dog is an excellent trainer, especially an active, very psycho German Shepherd puppy. So those kinds of things, but I never make myself do anything. And I still end up going out like five, six days a week. But one of the things that I think is a shift, and for me mentally, is that you can enjoy the things that you're doing. Working out doesn't have to be this like, oh, I gotta go get a workout in. That can go away completely when you find the thing that you love. And it could be anything that gets your body moving, you know, like I've played squash a lot, like tennis, like just finding the thing. And it is, like you said, trial and error. Mm-hmm. I think that just experimenting with what makes you happy. And yeah. Then for me, I don't always know if I love running or the high that I get after I run. And I'm not sure, because you obviously do quite a bit of strength training. There's that runner's high that people get.
Yeah.
Is there something equivalent in strength training? I haven't got there, if there is.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think with any kind of movement, once those endorphins mm-hmm. start flowing, that's when you're really like kind of hooked on doing it there, because you never regret showing up for a workout. Like once it's done, you never regret it. It's often too, like, showing up is the hardest part of it. I think to your point too about like never making yourself do something, a lot of people will ask me questions on like, well, like, you know, maybe I want to, but like my motivation is low, you know, like how do I like still keep showing up on days where like I really don't want to, but like maybe I know it would make me feel better. And something I recommend, I did not make this up, but I use it a lot. It's called the 10-minute rule.
Yes.
Where, yeah, of course you've heard of it. Yeah. Just promise yourself your workout or walk or run or whatever for 10 minutes, because we can do anything for 10 minutes, you know? And that's kind of your marker, is if you set that 10-minute timer, you look up, it's been 10 minutes and you're like, still like, I don't want to do this. Then that's your sign it wasn't meant to be. You know, pack up, try again tomorrow, because there's nothing worse than forcing yourself through a run or a workout or any kind of, you know, kind of cardio that you don't actually want to do. But chances are, I would say 95% of the time, that's really when those endorphins start flowing. You're feeling good, you're getting in the rhythm, and you don't want to stop. And then you're so glad that you showed up.
Now, one of the things that I do with podcasts is I'm messy buns today for people that are listening, is I went for a run before, because I find that my ideas just flow so much better when I've been active beforehand. So now one of the things that I actually do, I consciously make sure I go for a run like 2 hours before I record a podcast, just because it gets the ideas. Like, I get wicked ideas right out there. Just about things in general. I'm like, this is so great. But I think that, like, listening to us talking about this, we're obviously both women that have been through the process.
Yeah.
But if you had asked me 10 years ago if I would ever feel this way, like love, you know, love being active and love tracking my food, I would have been like, no, those are chores.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone's listening to this and being like, there's no way I'm ever going to love any kind of movement, I'm never going to want to track, what is your advice as a coach to start kind of getting to where you and I feel we are today? Like, what are the baby steps that can lead you down this life of, you know, taking care of yourself and feeling good about it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really just to start to do, because you're never going to know until you actually do it and practice it. You know, you can hear about it or and read about it and all that kind of stuff, but it really takes your own experience to do that. So I think, again, it's just really starting small, just focus on one of the things, you know, whether it's like you start implementing more cardio, you experiment with the kind of cardio you like, or you experiment with taking workout classes, group fitness, doing some, you know, weight training, you know, even if it's like short sets or two, or just, you know, focusing on nutrition and trying to track. I think it's just to start it, you know, it's kind of like, why not? You know, what's the worst that could happen if you try it? You don't like it and then you try something else. You know, it's like, ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen out of this? Other than like eventually leading you to find that light bulb moment. And a lot of the times too, it's like, well, how will I know? You know, and it's like, you'll know. But from us speaking about it, it's like, you'll know that light bulb moment's going to go off. And of course, it takes experience and practice, but like, you'll know once you find that thing that works for you, because instantly that light bulb moment will go off and you'll have found your thing.
Yeah. And I think it's just the confidence I feel, not necessarily about how I look physically, although obviously a lot of women report that that is a significant improvement, but sure. I feel like what I am capable of, you know, like when I'm out grinding, because I'll run marathons and whatever, and I'm like, my body can do this. And for me, that's just so powerful. Like I'm in the backwoods all the time, hiking and paddleboarding and that kind of thing. And the belief that I have, if something ever went sideways in my own body, I'm like, it could get me out of anything. Yeah. And that for me is the best feeling ever, is just having total confidence that your body can perform. And obviously a lot of that is physical activity, but so much of that is diet too. And one of the things that I find really interesting is a lot of people in my circle, I mean, I don't get this as much anymore, but when people find out that I work for a nutrition app and I do have, like, I love mini eggs. And they're like, oh, you're eating mini eggs and you work for a nutrition tracking app. And I'm like, actually, like, this is part of what my diet looks like. It's not black and white. It's not all or nothing, because I've done that before. I've done rice cakes and peanut butter because I was scared to eat bread and that kind of thing. Well, I'm sure you see women that are maybe men that are like that too. And it doesn't have to be that way. And I'm like, my diet is inclusive of everything. There's no good or bad foods, which is a quote I routinely steal from our nutrition scientist. She's amazing. They don't have morals. What is your approach with people with diet? Because obviously, like, maybe finding an activity, it might be a little bit easier than sitting down and being like, I'm going to sustain this particular way of eating forever, because that is the goal. And you said that earlier, it's like a 3-month change might change you for 3 months, but the key is always consistency and sustainability. I think those are the two secret ingredients to anything good. So can you talk to, you know, like diet a little bit and what you see in particular with your clients in your practice?
Yeah. And definitely I would say any sort of diet or, you know, quote unquote meal plan where it's going to ask you to restrict certain foods, not eat certain foods, only eat certain foods is not sustainable. It's not something that you can do for the rest of your life. So in order to find that something that you can do where like nothing is off limits, you can eat those foods that you love and so enjoy, I really do think macros is really helpful for that. Not only for that of like no restriction, you know, and you know, of course the nutrients in foods matters. I'm not so much of the mindset completely of like the if it fits your macros. Like it's not like you should be eating like, you know, 12 bags of chips as long as it meets, you know, 1700 calories kind of thing. You know, the nutrients is important, but it's really nice to be able to eat a wide variety of foods. And then learn throughout the process of logging macros with proteins, carbs, fats, like what are good sources of protein and what protein do you like? What are good sources of complex carbs and which ones give you personally the most energy? You know, what are healthy fats that fit really well with your breakfast, lunch, and dinners there? So like along the way, figuring out about not only macronutrients, but micronutrients. I think that that's really helpful to then be able to learn a ton about food and then help you build a sustainable nutrition, you know, routine, a well-balanced diet where you really are being able to eat, you know, like your favorite treats, your favorite foods. You don't feel guilty at holidays, you know, or events or parties and things like that, but you can still stay on track towards your goals.
I think that when I say that to people, because I'm pretty obviously front and center in our community, and I think that people think I'm selling them a dream a little bit though. You know what I mean? Like, so you're telling me I could love exercise. I can still eat the foods that I want and I can reach my goals. They're like, what is the catch? And there really isn't one. And it's just making, I think, everything in moderation, and that is something a billion people have said, but I found personally that when I stopped limiting myself and I was just like, you can eat whatever you want, Alisa, anything under the sun, it's yours. I didn't feel the need to, you know, I used to have like massive periods of restriction. I'm talking like less than 900 calories. I could do that for weeks. And I was, you know, at that point, like 110 pounds, like just tiny little thing. And then I would fall off the wagon, and not only would I fall off the wagon, I would take the wheels off. I'd throw them in the dust. Like I would full binge, you know, and as soon as I stopped that, you can't have this food. That all went away. And I'm not saying it was like overnight. I was like, you can eat anything. And then it was fine. Yeah. It's taken me years. And honestly, I attribute tracking and chronometer to basically helping me fix my relationship with food, because then I was like paying more attention to nutrients. You know, like you were saying, micronutrients. I was like, oh, like I do want more nutrient dense food because I know how that feels in my body and that's better. Yeah. But yeah, I think that it's just, those kinds of things, like allowing yourself permission. It does sound, again, a little airy-fairy, but it's overhauled everything. Do you find when you're in a practice with women and you're like talking about loving what you eat and loving working out, do people just think you're selling them a dream? like how do you get someone from where I was, which is someone that was like hardcore cardio, intense restriction, to someone who's like well fed and loving working out?
Yeah, totally. I definitely see that. Yeah, I'm like, what? This sounds too good to be true. So it has to be. Yeah. And I think it's first about trusting the process of supporting, like on my part, I can support and guide someone. And, you know, I'm going to give you all the tools. I'm going to help you learn. And you just got to trust the process. And I think it takes, you know, it's an adjustment period, I would say like 4 to 6 weeks. But once someone really is dedicated, they take that time, they put in the work, and then they start to see that increase in energy, that strength, that confidence that they're seeing in other areas in their life, you know, tons of non-scale victories, like being able to go on a really long hike and not losing energy and having that crash, you know, being able to sleep better, not being, you know, grouchy during the day, you know, because when you're on like a 900 calorie diet, like you're irritated. You're not a nice person. I speak from experience. Like nobody wants to be around you. So having that, like, you know, a more positive and having energy throughout the day, that all can really make a huge difference. So I think it's seeing that over time and then being like, oh, like this is really helping me, like not only change my relationship with food and learn more, but also having more energy, increasing my confidence. So it really is about trusting the process in those first couple of weeks there. But once you start really not only seeing the physical results, but feeling them, then it's like, all right, you know, I think you're onto something here. I'm going to stick with you and keep trusting the process.
I agree. Everything you're saying is spot on. From my own personal experience anyway. And I hope that the people that are listening, the women specifically, are like, yes, yes. Yeah. Like either like I understand that, which is best case scenario, or I, you know, aspire to feel that way. Yeah. What are some of the common challenges that you see specifically for women throughout your practice?
Yeah, I would say definitely body image issues is a huge thing. That's something that we all struggle with, of seeing those changes, especially coming from, you know, a lot of us trying to shrink ourselves, being cardio bunnies, being on restrictive, you know, low calorie diets. When you start to see those changes, it can be really uncomfortable. Like when you start to see like your arms, you know, sometimes we have more definition in our arms, but then all of a sudden there's that narrative like, well, are my arms bulky? Am I getting bulky? Because I don't want to get bulky, you know? So it's like that kind of thing. Or like we see the scale, you know, initially when you like start working up to a higher protein goal, or you're eating more whole natural foods, more fruits and veggies, sometimes like there can be some water retention and bloating in the beginning of that, just as your body's getting adjusted to it. There's always an adjustment period with a new routine with new macros. So then you see kind of like the scale tipping upwards, and then there's that fear again, that voice that comes in that's like, uh-oh, what I was doing before helped me see the scale go down. So should I go back to that? So there's definitely those like scary moments, those questionable moments. But again, it's just like offering that guidance and support, like, hey, I've totally been there. You know, this is what's happening. Where, you know, it just give your body a few weeks of time to adjust there. So I think it's working through those body image issues, seeing that number on the scale, you know, that kind of thing, and working through that mental shift, continuing that to get them, you know, again, trusting that process there.
I think one of the things too that derails people, I mean, there's lists of them, yeah. but one of the things in particular is that people don't know what to do in certain situations. And one of the things that I see most within our community, and a barrier, I think, with nutrition tracking is how to log a meal when people are eating out, because a lot of people do eat out frequently. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when some people will go off the rails.
Yeah.
Can you make any suggestions for people who are, you know, looking to have a sustainable strategy across the board for to reach their goal while, you know, being in any different environment, eating out, going on vacation? Like, obviously it's easier to stick to habits when you're making your own food, working out in your own home. But
yeah,
those are the things that can derail people. Can you speak to those about how people have sustainability regardless of where they are at physically?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a few things too. I think one is definitely like planning in advance, like as much as you can, you know? So if you're able to, you know, if you're going out to dinner later in the week, you know, maybe on a Friday, or say you're traveling and going out of town for the weekend, like being really diligent about your food and meal prep, cooking home food meals, tracking as best as possible leading up until that, you know, weekend or that one day, that one meal, you know. And then when you're doing that one meal, you can, you know, do your best to continue to estimate. It's not going to be perfect. That's usually what I tell people when they're out of town, you know, and trying to track, or when they are eating out at a restaurant, like it's not going to be perfect, but you can try to search up a comparable item. That way you're still like somewhat on track towards your macros. It's okay to go a little bit over. What I like to tell people too is that macros are just guiding numbers to help you. So like it's okay to like not ever hit them perfectly, or to be a little bit over or under on some days. And it really does like even out. You know, and a lot of people are skeptical of this, but when you're trying to meet like a weekly deficit for weight loss, there might be some days where you're a little bit under your calories. Maybe you're like 50 under, you know, 2 days out of the week. So if you go 100 over, you know, when you're eating out to dinner on Friday, then that really evens it all out. You know, as long as you're meeting that weekly deficit goal, there's wiggle room with macros. That way you can still stay on track towards your goals. I think the other thing too, when it comes to either like weekend trips, or when it comes to like being on vacation, was just knowing that like one day, one meal, or one weekend is not going to ruin your progress. That's what I like to tell people. So if you don't want to track, like if you're really trying to enjoy yourself on vacation, you know, you've been working super, super hard and diligent over like several weeks, months at a time, like it's okay to take a day or two off of tracking there and enjoy yourself, because that's a lot of the times what, you know, vacations and weekend trips are intended for, is to relax, not only physically, but mentally too. So it's okay to take a break. It's okay to not be perfect with your macros, or enjoy like a nice dinner out, or, you know, a nice dessert or a couple of cocktails, and just know that like it's the overall progress and consistency that matters most. not perfection. So having one day isn't going to like ruin like the months or weeks of progress that you've been working towards, especially if you've been super diligent. That balance is truly important.
Yeah, for me, that was something that I struggled with, and maybe other people do as well. It was like, oh, I had this weekend that derailed my goals. I'm just going to throw in the towel. You know, I'm just like, which is absolutely insane now in hindsight to think that, you know, I let 2 days of, first of all, what I would previously have called like a slip up, which I don't anymore, you know, like it's even how we talk to ourselves, I think that goes a long way. Like I'm not someone that has cheat days or cheat meals or anything like that, because for me, and this is just personal, but I think that evokes some kind of guilt at some kind of level. And I just don't want to do that. So I would love to talk about different tracking and how people do it differently, because you probably see this in your practice, that there is not a one size fits all way to do this. And I definitely see this within our community. And I think people are always so shocked to hear someone in my role saying, you don't need to track every day. But that's because they're like, well, you work for a nutrition tracking app. Obviously, that would be great. For me, if I don't track every day, even though I'm 6 years in to tracking with Chronometer, and before that, like pen and paper, if I don't track every day, I will miss something, even though I'm eating like relatively the same things. So for me, it's just a habit. It takes me like less than a minute a day because I have, you know, I have it dialed. But I don't think that there is a wrong way to track at all. People who want to check in with their diet, you know, like my mom, she's on a very restrictive diet. I just check in every once in a while, make sure she's hitting her targets, and then we like leave that be. There are different things that work for different people. Can you talk to some of the different strategies that you see that are effective when it comes to tracking?
Yeah, that's a really great question. A lot of times too, I will recommend to people, because when women typically come to me and I ask them, like, do you have experience tracking, you know, logging your food or macros or anything like that? A lot of the times they'll tell me, yeah, like I've used an app in the past and like it was super tedious. I hated it. And then I gave up, you know, after a few weeks because it was so tedious. So I really try to give people like some tips and tricks to make tracking a little less tedious. And of course, it's something that the more you do, like you said, it takes you a minute and then it's done because you're so in the routine with it. But a lot of strategies that I'll try to get people to implement, and this does go along a lot with like meal prepping and planning, is to just try to log most of your food, like either first thing in the morning or maybe even the night before, like get it out of the way. So that way you're not going in at each individual meal and taking that time. Okay, I got to log the rice. I got to like, you know, the chicken, whatever, you know, it's all done for you. And then you can already choose see how your macros look for the next day. So that's what I typically recommend to people. It's a nice way to get that done. And it's also a great accountability piece because if you think about it, it takes a lot of work to log all of that in advance. It would take even more work to like go in, delete it, log something else. So it really makes you second guess. Like, okay, I'm going to stay accountable to eat this food that I've already logged and prepped because it's a lot of work to unlog it. And then two, to even take that a step further, if someone is particularly like super busy, like has crazy work, you know, isn't able to, again, go in at each day individually. If someone has the ability to like ingredient prep for a week or even meal prep for the week over like a few days at a time, I'll just tell them like, go ahead and pre-log in Chronometer for that entire week. That's one of the things I love about Chronometer is that you can log for days in advance. And so get it all out of the way, prep and plan it. And then what's also helpful for that is that when you plan and prep and log over several days at a time, you can really see patterns in your diet. You can see those areas where you could use another fiber source or two, you know, or that area where you could boost up the protein a little bit at your lunches, that's kind of lacking, you know, or I could use another snack here, you know, I'm a little low under my calories, like let me add that to every day. So that's really helpful for seeing those long-term patterns in your diet and those like little areas where you can make like tiny tweaks here and there. So I think it's just planning and prepping in advance, and then to like utilizing the hacks in Chronometer of like saving recipes. So if you regularly make something, you know, it's saved in there. You never have to add each individual ingredient again. Feature for Chronometer Gold, where you link that URL to a recipe and then it's going to import the ingredients. I'll tell a lot of people to use that if they have a lot of online recipes. Just like the copy and paste function too, that's really great for logging for a few days in advance, because if you prepped the same lunch, just copy and paste it, you know, to all your lunches for that week, and then it's ready to go. So it's like utilizing those tools to make it, sorry, that's my cat's tail, to make it, she's here on the podcast, in the background.
I love that. What's her name?
Mowgli is her name.
Mowgli. Oh, how appropriate.
She's coming. She's like, hello.
That's so funny. Nova, I have a shepherd, and she'll always come on our Zoom calls at Chronometer, like what we have, and just her tail is like swishing and like hitting my face mid Zoom call, and everyone's like, we all see you, Nova. We see your butt. Thank you. I have to lock her out of the podcast, because otherwise she's like super. Sometimes she'll hear me get really excited because I'm like quite an animated person. And then she just like tries to like knock down the door, and everyone's like, "What is that thumping?" I'm like, "That is my dog trying to break into the podcast room." Anyway. That's great. I love that. It's so human. That's great. I forget where we were. Right. Tracking, nutrition tracking, and it being a sustainable habit. For me, like a lot of people ask me all the time if I find tracking to be restrictive. Mm-hmm. And I can see where they're coming from. But for me, I feel it like it's very freeing. And it, depending on the day and my mood and how hungry I am and how much activity I've done and that kind of thing, it's sometimes I get to the end of the day and I'm like, whoa, I had a woeful amount of calories. That doesn't happen very often because I love eating. But every once in a while, I'm like, because I wear an Apple Watch and I'm like, whoa, they're not perfect. So it's kind of a ballpark number, which is important for people to remember. But I'm like, I, including my BMR, burned, 2,500 calories a day. I've had like 16. Yeah. Now through wearing a tracker and Chronometer, I have a much better understanding of what that will do, not at the time, but days later. Like the next day, super hungry. The following day, if I didn't get my calories back up, I am like absolutely ravenous. Yep. And I will eat everything. And for me, like those insights, I wouldn't have understood my body in the way that I do now if I didn't track, because I would just, I get busy, I'm doing a lot of activity in a day, just don't hit my targets, or I think that I weigh all my food, which again sounds very tedious, but for me it's just easier than measuring stuff because I have the zero it out, it's very fast. It's very fast for me. But sometimes I think that I've eaten more than I actually have. And for me, what it comes down to, not my weight so much anymore, because like I said previously, that's really stabilized, but the energy is really noticeable. And if I don't log, I definitely don't feel as vital. So I understand when people say that it can feel restrictive, and to each their own, absolutely, because everyone's on a different journey. But for me, the insights that provides alone has been so powerful. And I do long hikes, and when I'm snowmobiling, I'm in the backcountry, and it's a lot of work. And I've learned when I'm not well fed, like in the middle of the day, because my default when I'm out doing activity is to not eat, because I'm just like go. But then I hit this wall. And then I'm useless, I just feel sluggish. And if I eat, that doesn't happen. And I think that those are the kind of insights that really help people get like feeling here as opposed to just like getting through the day. It's like getting through the day and feeling great. So,
Yeah, I think that mindfulness, if you can switch the mindset, I do understand people's reservations with tracking, especially if they've had bad experiences in the past, but shifting that mindset to it's more about bringing awareness, having mindfulness surrounding nutrition, that it can really be a game changer in the most positive way.
I see that too. There are some communities in Reddit, which I'm very active on, and they have an emphasis on restriction, and I don't typically chime in on those things just because I'm very sensitive as well, just because I have had a disordered eating history, and I just kind of don't really want to offer any advice or guidance there, because I think that people, it's fragile for them, because I know it was fragile for me. But there are things that I will occasionally, if people are like, calorie tracking is triggering. I've heard it's described in those terms. Sure. And I say, like, you can actually remove all of the information about calories from the app, and you can only focus on what matters to you. And I think that is a huge shift, because I went from someone who religiously tracked calories to someone who started tracking macros to micros to now I'm like tracking my sleep. I'm tracking like everything, you know, and I believe that anybody can get there and hopefully get away just from the fear of calorie. Basically, like, that's when I was in high school, I don't know about for you, but it was like almost trendy for people. Like, I remember I was absolutely dummying a bag of Nibs, and I was very small in high school, and one of my friends was like, I can't believe you're going to eat that whole thing. I'm like, why wouldn't I? Like, no, of course I'm going to eat this whole giant family pack of Nibs. Yes, right. I will. And then I'm like, what's the big deal? And then she's like, it's bad for you. I'm like, there's no fat. Because at that time, that was like what we were told was bad. It was fat. Right. I'm like, there's like 2 grams of fat in this. Yeah. And she's like, it's the calories, Elisa. And then literally, that is like the moment I just became this obsessive tracker. And I think like it's crazy that I can pinpoint the moment that like my disordered eating really began, because then I was like so mindful of everything. And then at that time, the media was feeding us that, you know, like I subscribed to Women's Health and Shape, and I know that it's changed a lot in that time, but even like some of our competitor apps that have been around a long time, it was like what to eat on a 1200 calorie diet. Like, my BMR is more than 1200 calories. So I think
it's fuel to the fire.
Yes, it really did. And I think that one of the things that's challenging for me, growing up in like a time with social media and stuff, is that for whatever reason, women's figures are a trend, you know, always. Yeah. And I think that now we're trending to strong, capable women. So I'm excited that this is what is happening. But I was a child in the 90s, but I know seeing like Calvin Klein, not to call out Calvin Klein specifically, but Calvin Klein ads where there's like very slender women, you know, and that was basically like true in like the 2000s, early 2000s as well, when I was like very influenced by like magazines, and now on social media, people are constantly served what is accepted as beauty. And I think we're finally now like getting to a place of hopefully embracing more like people's embracing the things that make them individuals, as opposed to just like fit in this cookie cutter thing. But I think that it's been quite a road, and for anyone that's, you know, around the same age as me, like in their 30s, they've probably seen it all. And or even older, obviously. And it's just, it can be super, super overwhelming. So I think we're on the precipice of that changing. And are you seeing like the mindset shift in your practice? Is it just me, or are we actually on the verge? Please confirm my thoughts. Are we actually on the verge of people like embracing strengthen?
Yeah. I would even say particularly in the last maybe like 2 to 3 years, really seeing that shift there of more women speaking out to, and more women, you know, fighting, like, I don't know, fighting back, pushing back on the media of being like, no, we're not going to be put into this little box where each of us like are trying to look the same kind of figure that you're like portraying on magazines, on heavily edited, you know, photos and campaign ads and things like that. But to push back on that, I think something that I like to think about and say to people is like, you know, you could look at it as like flaws, you know, like, you know, based on genetics, like, oh, my thighs are, you know, bigger than everyone else. I don't have like the thigh gap, you know, or like my arms, you know, are like bigger, you know, that kind of thing. And like, instead of looking at those as like flaws, like looking at those things that those are what make you unique. Like, I used to be really self-conscious about like being super pale. Like, I've always been, you know, very fair skinned, and I have a lot of freckles and moles. And those are things I used to be really self-conscious about. I would want to cover them up. I used to use like tanning lotion. I looked orange, you know, it was, you know, bad, you know, foundation that was like the different, my neck was like a completely different cut, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think once you embrace those so-called flaws and think about it as like, actually, like, no one else in the world, no one else in the universe is like me. I am unique. And so once you think of it that way, of like, well, actually, I love my, you know, my thighs, like they are strong, they take me places, and actually like that, like no one else has this like me. So when you begin to shift that, I think that's when you can really start to break out of that box that we're all, you know, trying to be shoved in, you know, by everyone else and their portrayals of what women should look like. And once you start to kind of like push back against that, I find that there's strength in numbers too, of like the more that women talk about this and speak out about it and embrace their, you know, so-called flaws and things that make them unique, the more that we have, you know, empowerment and an overall bigger voice to continue to push back and change that narrative. So it is happening, and it's exciting to see. It's slow, you know, I think, but when you can look back on, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I really do think there's that shift for the better there. And that, as long as, you know, I think women continue to speak up and we have that united front to continue that pushback, I think it's going to get better.
Yes. That's all I have. Yes to all of that. I think that one of the things that has changed my mindset so much, and you said this, and I love that you said this because that means you're spreading the message to your clients, which I love, is just to focus on what you're capable of doing as opposed to how you look. Mm-hmm. You know, like my body type, I have very thick thighs. Yeah. And I mean, technically speaking, that's on trend right now, but that wasn't before. And it's definitely something in high school that I was teased about a little bit, not like a lot, but like good naturedly teased about. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I don't like that. You know, I want to like change this. It's probably not going to happen unless I'm super, super, super tiny. But I stopped thinking like, I need to change this, to being like, these thighs, actually, you know what? They will run 42 kilometers anytime I ask them to. Yep. And I think that has been a huge shift for me. And when I'm talking to people within our community, obviously I have to use the voice of Chronometer a lot of the time. And Alisa is saying like, yeah, get it. Chronometer is saying like, nice job. That's great. But I just, when I see people that like, that click for them, because I do, we get tagged in a lot of stories, and I am on Reddit like all day, every day. When I see that, I'm just like, yes, like it's finally happening. And people are focusing more on what their bodies can accomplish than even how they look. And I think that that's the most empowering thing that you can do. And
yeah,
that's really why I take care of myself. When people, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, when people are like, why? Like, what is your why for taking care of yourself? I'm like, I want to do whatever I want to do for as long as I can possibly do it. My dad, he just turned 72. Happy birthday a couple days ago, Dad. My dad is an absolute weapon. He is out there cross-country skiing. Like, I think it was like 1,500 kilometers he cross-country skied last year. And I'm just like, he's so active. He's always cycling. And what his body is capable of at his age, I'm like, I want to be you. And that is my goal. And if people think shout out to my mom too, who's awesome. I can't leave her out. She's actually probably the one that's going to be listening to this realistically. But when I think about my why, it's I want to be able to have that freedom for as long as I possibly can. Because when I see how people are aging, I want to be the people that like are like, how are you still doing this at your age? And it's like, you know, most of them say like, I never stop moving. And that for me is my why. So when I'm seeing people that are like really fixated on looking a certain way, obviously that's great. And if that's what motivates you, I'm 100% behind you. But I think that the secret sauce and that makes me do anything is just, I really want the freedom that my body gives me for as long as I possibly can have it. And I don't think that I would, I absolutely know if I didn't work at Chronometer, if I didn't track my food, if I wasn't aware of like what my body is doing, you know, cardiovascularly or that kind of thing, I wouldn't get there in the same way. Yep. Do you feel I just kind of jumped on like a motivational speech, but do you feel the same way? Do you feel like what you're doing now is setting you up? Because I don't think people are living for their future selves. I don't think people are thinking when I'm 70, I want to be doing this, but this is what it's all about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That longevity, it definitely matters, that ability to keep doing things. And the thing too, is that you're totally right. Having like, you know, a scale or a measurement or some sort of thing to like a goal to reach towards, it is good, but it's good, honestly, short term, but you need to have a longer term, a bigger reason why you're doing this in order for the routine to be sustainable. And I think it's definitely true that like people can get started and have that weight goal or that measurement goal, you know, and then like once they get to it, they're hooked and they want to, you know, keep going, or maybe their goals change. But like, that's the thing. It's like, once you've reached that goal, then it's like, what do you do now? You know, so having that bigger overall of why and having that be, you know, sustainability, longevity, being able to keep up your endurance, you know, being able to go out and do like, you know, high intensity sports or long, you know, endurance type things, like that's really important. And I think too, like that, like I want to live a long time. I want to, like, I'll have a lot of people that come in. I think this is the right mindset too, of like, I want to be around for my kids, you know, like I want to be able to chase them around and be able to do fun activities for them. I don't want to slow them down, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that's kind of the right mindset to have, of like, you want to live a long life and you want to live a life full of like purpose and meaning. And in order to do that, you really got to have those sustainable habits and routine in place.
I completely agree. I was listening to a podcast. I'm a big fan of Peter Attia's, Dr. Peter Attia. I should clarify that. And he was talking about, he wrote it in his book, which the name of is absolutely eluding me right now, but I read the book, and it was talking about health span as opposed to like lifespan and how many years you're strong and capable. And for me, focusing on that, I don't want to just live a long time. I want to live a long time the way that I want to live, and feel vital. So we've covered a lot of information. This has been awesome. My favorite thing always is at the end of a podcast is to ask our special guest if they had one piece of advice that they could give our listeners today, what would it be? The number one thing that you think people could do that would change their health?
Yeah. I guess too, I would say if anyone's listening to this podcast, you know, either, whenever it goes live, if you're thinking about starting your journey, if you've been, you know, waiting, if you've been waiting for the right time, there's never going to be a right time. So take this as your sign to start, you know, today or tomorrow or this week or whatever that be. So if you're listening to this right now, I'm telling you, start right now, start finding that thing that you love, and find that enjoyment, start slow, build up your routine. But just know that you are absolutely capable of achieving your goals. There's no right time. And there's also, it's never too late. I feel like a lot of people have that mindset of like, well, it's too late for me. You know, I'm already, you know, X age or X, you know, this, you know, I just might as well throw in the towel. But that's all a part of that all or nothing mindset of like, you got to break that. And it's really difficult, but just take this as your sign to start and know that you're absolutely capable. And there's no better time to start than right now.
Couldn't agree more. One of my favorite one of my favorite quotes ever is the best time to start anything is 20 years ago. The second best time is today, because you can just you can change the trajectory of your whole life, and it is absolutely seize the moment.
Yeah.
Laura Lee, you've been absolutely amazing, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to fall in love with you. And when they do, where can they find you?
Yeah, that's a great point. Definitely on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. Both are at laura.leefitness. So you can go ahead, give a shout out, make some reels and some TikTok content there. And yeah.
That's amazing. I will drop that in the show notes so people can find you. If somebody wanted to work with you as one of your clients, how do they do that?
Fantastic question. Yeah, they just go to the Caliber website, reach out, get an inquiry for one-on-one coaching, and then just drop my name, say I want to work with Laura Lee. And they'll get us set up and working together, and then we'll get you to crushing your goals.
I love that. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. You've been an absolutely wonderful guest, and I've enjoyed your vivacious personality.
Yeah, this has been so fun.
It has been. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope that this episode of the podcast inspires you to eat more and move more and truly find joy in both your diet and exercise programs. If you love this episode, make sure you pass it along to anyone else that might love it too, and subscribe to Discovering Nutrition with Chronometer for future episodes. Until next time.